Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar. Joe Rex Road is out today. He will be back tomorrow. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We got a lot of things to get into this hour. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Anywhere you want to go with the Titans, we'll get to it here in the next 30 minutes. I do have some college football thoughts to get to later this hour as well. A lot of you very mad about the traffic situation around here.
That's always behavior. Something around here.
Boy, text line is just popping right now. With
people have their suggestions, issues, problem solving. Text line is a wonderful place.
It really is. It really is just a beautiful place. Keep them coming. 615-737-1025. Let's head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning, buddy. How we doing?
Yeah, how you doing, man? Robbie, your good friend, Mark.
Yeah, it's my good friend, Mark.
Gotta announce it like
who,
that,
by the way, is, I think, about to give us an expert lesson on some of the driving stuff that goes on around here, who Mark is very familiar with the road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Robbie, you know, I drive a truck for a living, so, you know, I've kind of seen it all, man. And this traffic has gotten worse and worse. There's a lot of aggression out here. You can kind of look at people when they go by you, Robbie, and just kind of look at them and see their demeanor, man. It's like they're driving in anger. I mean, it really is. And what you were talking about, you say you got a construction site going up there, and you got an arrow pointing left saying left lane is going to be closed. These people nowadays don't care. Trucks, cars, whatever. They're going to ride that left lane to the end. But see, Robbie, if you got in line, like you said, like everybody else and waited patiently, that traffic would flow through there a whole lot better.
Oh,
but
yeah,
people don't want to look at it that way. They look at it like it's going to ruin their day if they have to sit here and wait like this. Well, really what you're doing, you're pissing a lot of people off that by you sitting here and staying in that lane and running it up, and you're making a situation worse than what it is. And, you know, you have a lot of out of respect. I see more women drivers, Robbie, that are more aggressive than guys. A lot of guys out here now and stuff, man. It's like
interesting.
It's like a NASCAR race every day. I've seen them do 140, 150 on Briley Parkway back there.
Gosh.
I mean, I got a radar in the truck. I've seen them racing back there. 24 has been considered the worst interstate in America. You want to see road rage at its best? Get out there on 24 and see what it's like out there. I mean, it's just. And I think what has really hurt Nashville is the lack of a true bypass in that city, man. All the interstates, if you look at it, Robbie, run into one. And that's a backup right there waiting to happen. The interstates are not spread it out. They run in conjecture into one. All of them do 40, 65, 24. If you look at it, it runs just like that. That's even worse problems. I mean, the engineers ought to be ashamed of themselves in Nashville for building those interstates like that, man. And I run Atlanta every day, Robbie. Now, you're talking about a nightmare.
Oh, man.
That is the worst city in America down there as far as traffic, man.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever been in Atlanta and not gotten stuck in traffic, ever.
Yeah. I mean, Robbie, I go down there, and by the time I get down there around 290 Rome, Georgia, down that X, it's backed up from there all the way down to the 280 loop down there, man.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just ugly down there, man. And, like you said, more people moving there, but you got less infrastructure, and the less infrastructure has really hurt these cities and stuff, man. I mean, there's nowhere to put anything at now. So, yeah, I could sit here and talk to you for the next 24 hours about what goes on out here and stuff. Because, man, I've seen it all out here and stuff. But
Mark, keep fighting the good fight, brother. Appreciate you calling in today.
All right, man. Y'all have a good day.
Yes, sir.
All right, Ian.
Mark from Nashville.
Thanks, Mark.
I'm going to say, man, the Atlanta part of this, dude, it starts like in Chattanooga.
It does.
It's brutal.
I mean, really there's a stretch in Chattanooga where it's kind of hit or miss where they have the construction going up the hill there on 24 when you get downtown. But that's mostly because of construction. And that 24 bypass there through Atlanta, leaving Florida, kind of that whole situation there is tricky.
Let's take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Matt from Camden texting in. says, let's say the offensive line shows some improvement, but not a lot, and J.C. Latham takes a step back.
Back?
Do you think they hold Bill Callahan accountable or blame Rand because he drafted him, assuming Brian Callahan is coming back? Well, let me say this. It's hard for me to imagine the offensive line showing some improvement if J.C. Latham is taking a step back. Like, look, I've said it from the start. I don't love the idea of drafting J.C. Latham to be a left tackle and then a year later pivoting off that and putting him back at right tackle. I don't like that. But if he ends up being a great right tackle, then I don't really care. That's fine. Like, but I need him to be a great right tackle. You took him at number 7 overall. He needs to step in and be a player that you look at by the end of this season and you say, yeah, that guy's going to be here for a long time and he's going to play at close to an all-pro level as a right tackle. That's what you need J.C. Latham to be. So if he's taking a step back this year, number one, Ian, that's not going to mean – it's hard for me to believe your offensive line is improving all that much if he's taking a step back.
I mean
– and if that's the case
– might as well be PT out there.
Yeah. If that's the case, then – what you're probably going to see happen is the Titans be awful again, and you're going to see the coach get fired. I mean, that would be my guess.
He can't. Yeah. Step back would not be good, you know. If he stayed the same, I have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, but to regress.
That's not what you're looking
for. That can't happen.
And I don't expect that to happen.
I don't know who would get the blame, you know, to the second part of that question.
I don't think this roster – and even without knowing exactly how good Cam Ward is going to be, I don't think this roster is built to overcome an offensive line again that is just brutal. So, to me, if J.C. Latham takes a step back, well, I guess there is a scenario where he takes a step back, but everybody else on the line is pretty good. I still find that unlikely, but maybe.
The left side maybe is okay. The case.
Maybe it's okay. Maybe Dan Moore comes in and he's a good fit here, and maybe that's the case. And they end up being, as a team, better than you think. At that point, then I do think it would probably be, well, who did Rand draft here at the right tackle spot? Because if the team improves and they're winning 6 or 7 games this year, which I know, get excited, Titans fans, 6 or 7 games. If that happens, but Latham's bad in the midst of all of it, then you're probably still not firing the coach at that point would be my guess. But, man, it's not great. Like, they need the Bill Callahan part of this to pay off. I think a lot of it last year was personnel-related, and they thought that they could make Petit Frere a better player than he was, and it was just a disaster from the start.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have that excuse with me this year. Like, Latham's on the right side. You spent a ton of money to go bring in Dan Moore.
Year two in the system. I guess you have a rookie quarterback.
You got a rookie quarterback, and we'll see. Like,
it's not like Levis was doing anything to help the offensive line.
I think it's going to be hard for Ward to have less of a pocket presence and an awareness than Levis had.
For sure.
Like, there, you know, I watched some of the sacks that he took again a few weeks ago just to go back and look at it. And some of them, the offensive line is just getting absolutely blown by.
Yeah, right.
And you don't
off the
have
bat.
Any chance. But some of it is him just drifting in the pocket and running into sacks, holding on to the ball too long, like
turning weird ways.
He did not help his offensive line last year. And I'm not trying to make excuses for that awful offensive line, but he was a part of the problem last year. And Cam Ward, I would hope, is going to have a little bit better pocket awareness than that.
You would think. I mean, yeah, I think he will, and it seems like he will, and he seems to get the ball out quick, you know, how quickly he can start to read some of these defenses and who Ward can kind of find as the security blanket, so to speak, as maybe as somebody as a check down guy. Maybe that would be, you know, I think he can probably figure that out. Yeah. I was a little disappointed. There didn't seem like there were more outlet passes for some of the, you know, for Levis as like a, you know, pressure beater, and he just wasn't able to make it happen, and it wasn't more on the coaching staff and the scheme, but I felt like they could have done more to help with some type of safety valve for Levis on some of those. But maybe they were there and just Levis just didn't read them, or he was too worried about trying to hit the big play.
Ron on the text line asking if we think that the Oilers/Titans have had the most of the best running backs in NFL history. I remember looking at this, Ian, a few years ago.
Yeah, we talked about this.
When the, I think it was the NFL Network, I want to say, like ranked all-time, like who's got the best, what franchise has the all-time best quarterbacks, or which franchise has the all-time best receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Titans were in there.
They're up there.
With the running. Like when you look at it,
yeah,
the trio of, I mean, really, they got four. Earl Campbell, Eddie George, Chris Johnson, Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
That's hard to top.
Those four are hard to beat. Yeah. I'd have to go back through and look at the list some more.
I mean, the Steelers have had some great backs.
Yep. With Jerome Bettis and such.
Yeah. Franco Harris. You had, you know, obviously Le'Veon Bell for a little bit at the top of his
game. That's right.
Too,
he flashed there for a couple of years.
Decided to sit out.
He messed that up.
But, I mean, the Steelers have had some good backs. There have been some teams that have had some good backs.
Dallas.
Rams have had some good backs. Dallas have had some good backs. But I would – I mean, it's good.
Buffalo's got
those
had a couple.
Four?
That's, like, I mean, that's legit.
That's hard to top, that four right there.
Yeah, I mean, two to hit 2,000 yards in one franchise?
I would say without – you know, right off the top of my head, without looking at everybody else, I'm going to doubt – that any other franchise has four that are that accomplished.
I would probably agree. I'd have to go back and double check all the lists, but those, I mean, they're legit. I mean, you're talking CJ, Henry, Campbell, and Eddie George.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's hard to talk.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
So what you're telling me is, let's run that ball. Let's do what the Titans have done best for a long time around here. Tony Pollard. Strap it up this year, baby.
Maybe they'll be running towards J.C. Latham.
Maybe.
You know. Run right. And you brought in Zeitler, the guard, free agent guard. He's supposed to be pretty good. Quality veteran guy. Been around for a long time. Dependable. Hey, I don't know. Pollard didn't get that much love in the running back.
He did not.
Column, the top 10 list. So... I don't know. Maybe they don't have the horses to quite run this year like we would expect. Maybe Tajay Spears will actually step up.
Maybe
but,
so.
No.
That would help.
They say run game could be one of a rookie quarterback's best friend. So maybe they will try to run the ball more.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Let's take more of your Titans questions on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Anywhere you want to go with the Titans, we'll get to that. Coming up next, I do have some college football thoughts to get to later in the hour. As well, we'll do all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
I'll kind of share with you guys the same message I share with our team, that I just appreciate their attendance. I appreciate their buy-in, the work that we put in. We're a better football team now than we were when we started. And I'm excited about getting ready for training camp. The guys have really... it's been competitive. It's been intense. We've gotten a lot of great work in over the course of the offseason program. And that ultimately doesn't guarantee us anything. And so we got a lot of work still ahead of us. We got a whole training camp to go. But I like where we're at. I'm appreciative of the effort that's been put in. And I'm excited to wrap this up today. I think we got three teams, maybe a fourth team, sort of in the running on this last day. Two teams are only separated by a point here and with one to play. So it should be pretty competitive for this guy's trying to finish off the offseason on a high note.
That was Brian Callahan, training camp, a couple weeks out here for the Tennessee Titans. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks from today, they'll be on the field for the first day of training camp.
Let's bring it.
Getting closer to training camp coming up. We're taking your thoughts, your questions on the Titans, 615-737-1025. By the way, Dennis pointing out, hey, talking about the running backs, Titans also had Adrian Peterson. They did.
Oh, I forgot about Adrian Peterson. I always forget that he was here.
Yeah, I think most people do. They did have Adrian Peterson for a little bit of time here in Tennessee. I mean, think about that. Randy Moss, former Titan. Adrian Peterson, former Titan. You had D-Hop in there. Julio. There's a lot of star power that they've had that
didn't do anything.
Did not really do anything. I mean, Hopkins is kind of separate from all that because – he at least had one pretty good year.
Andre
Johnson. Throw him in there, too.
Just a couple of late season, I guess, some twilights there for a couple of guys. But Titans aren't unique in that, I wouldn't think, throughout the league.
I wouldn't think so. One texter going back to the running back discussion says, maybe the Rams with Dickerson, Falk, Steven Jackson, and Todd Gurley. Still giving the edge to the Titans, though, might be biased. I mean, the Rams, I thought of, they're
That's some
They're
good
close.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty good. Dickerson, Falk, Jackson, Gurley.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I still would probably give the edge to the Titans, but it's close at least. That's you know, you're looking for four, right?
Like
I think the four is the hard to find.
Yeah. Cuz you can find a couple, you know, like of course Cleveland and had a couple, but
right.
Yeah.
So the Rams at least that's a four that I think you got to look at and at least consider there. Chris in Nashville says, I can't wait until Stafford comes in here and drops 40 on the Titans in the home opener. Chris, are you a Titans fan? Are we already just waiting and celebrating the Titans' impending doom this year?
I mean, they probably will put up a bunch of points against the Titans. I'm already worried about week one. Forget about that. On the road in Denver.
And I will say,
I mean, the Titans first 2 weeks here destroyed.
First 2 weeks here got a chance to be rough. I mean, like, the game is played on the field and not on paper, so that's the beautiful part about football. You know, I think back to Ken Wisenhunt and how much of a coaching savant he was in week one. Week one, that guy's unbelievable. And then every other week, it didn't go very well for the Titans. But you got Denver on the road in week one and that defense.
I think their defense is really good, and apparently their offensive line is really good.
Yes.
I was just listening. You know, we do some off-season research and just listening around and stuff, and they've graded out pretty well.
Yeah.
That's
going to be tough.
Maybe I didn't realize it, and you just combine that, the Titans' lack of pass rush with a good offensive line versus a rookie quarterback in the new offensive line versus an awesome Denver pass rush and Denver defense on the road, it's shaping up to be a rough one.
Doesn't sound great. And then you got L.A. coming in here, and I think we'll see how it shakes out and if Stafford can stay healthy. But it's, I mean, that point would be week two. You would assume Stafford's going to be healthy.
Fine.
Like, that offense with Davante Adams coming in.
That'd be interesting to see.
I
forgot that he signed.
Good.
Yeah, you always, you know, this time of year, now is when you need to go back and start looking at all the offseason moves and who's on whose team. You know, that's why these top 10 lists are pretty good and the offensive skilled position lists are pretty good. Not only because it's, you know, interesting where your team slots, but it gives you a good idea of some of the offseason moves. You know, you forget who signed who left, who was traded, all that kind of stuff. So Davante Adams there, you know, DK Metcalf to Pittsburgh, Cooper Kupp to Seattle, all these different moves you kind of forget about.
Dustin in Hopkinsville says, I just enjoy how every Titans page on social media after every practice is talking about every throw by Ward in shorts, no pads, against air defenses. They report Ward to be the absolute right choice, that there's hard evidence for him coming in early with videos practicing in the daylight of 9 o'clock. I mean, look, I like the fact that he shows up early in practices and he's there at 5 o'clock and he's leading all that stuff. I mean, at this point, the only information we got to go on is the mini camp and what he's done then. So we're going to find out more
in those workouts.
In training camp. But look, I'm with everybody who says, let's place some pretty severe limitations on the prevailing takeaways that we're going to have in mini camp and certainly into training camp here in the next few weeks. Like, I'm not saying it's totally meaningless, particularly with a young quarterback. I think you can kind of glean some things about maybe where he is in training camp, but also, like, just because if he goes, he's probably going to have a day coming up here in camp, Ian,
or
he throws
pretty.
Like three picks.
Yeah.
And I think everybody needs to be prepared for that. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to have some of those days in training camp and
for
work
sure.
through that.
I think as a fan, you need to expect that kind of stuff. You know, it's not going to be just a linear up, 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 up every day. You know, there's going to be up, up, maybe down, down, back up, kind of even. It's not just, you know, one way. It's going to be up and down. It's going to be up and down. It's a rookie thing. He's learning all types of new stuff. So, yeah, I would agree. You know, don't get too high. Don't get too low during camp.
Well, and also, one thing I feel like we're going to be talking about all camp long, what's the quality of what he's throwing to? Outside of Ridley, what's the quality of what he's throwing to?
Yeah.
Is Bryce Oliver a good player? Like, is he going to be a guy that's a good player in the NFL? Is
Ayo
Manor, like, is he ready to go from the jump and he's a, like, Ayo Manor's like a 700-yard guy right out of the gate? I mean, I know that you hear that and you think 700 yards, that's not very much. It's not. It's a rookie. We're talking
for
about
a
like,
rookie.
Like, if you
fourth
told me
rounder.
Ayo Manor was going to get 700 yards right now, I think you'd be nuts if you're a Titans fan not to sign up for that.
Yeah.
I do.
I mean, 700 for a rookie, fourth rounder, you got to take that.
Yeah. I think you'd be insane not to take
considering
that.
What they had last year.
But I think that's going to be a part of the training camp story here too is, like, if the offense is struggling, how much of that is Ward? How much of that is the operation? And how much of that is who's out there running routes? Yeah. Who they're throwing the ball to?
Can they create any type of separation?
Right. Because I've got some doubts about that as we sit here today.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if a security blanket, you know, does he go just familiarize himself, or, you know, go back to the familiar face of Restrepo?
Maybe.
During camp, and we're just like, Ward to Restrepo, 5 yard, 10 yard slant. Ward to Restrepo, 5, 10 yard slant. Like, that's good, and you need that, but that's not going to win you enough games in the season.
It is not, but that's also probably how Restrepo makes this team. If it goes down that way in training camp, and he's just making catch after catch after catch after catch.
Yeah, maybe he can become a possession slot guy.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I know that there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on him.
Oh, it's going to be constant. They're going to be talking about him all the time, and we'll see what kind of reps he gets as far as, like, the place in line and the drills and all that kind of stuff. I know it's limited on what you can report as far as formations go and where so-and-so is lining up. Seems like he'd be mostly a slot guy. But, yeah, we'll see where he lines up in the drills and who's getting what.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll get to some more of your Titans thoughts, plus a couple college football thoughts that I want to get to as well, including a coach yesterday who said something that I really just couldn't believe that he said it. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This fall, live at the Pinnacle at Nashville Yards, Tim McGraw will perform at Trinitixis Rock the Cradle. This event's sure to be a great time celebrating a great cause. Proceeds from the event will support newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. Also today, make sure you come to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and meet Nashville native and two-time IndyCar champion Joseph Newgarden from 5:30 to 7 o'clock. Big Joe will be on site for a special broadcast of Chasing Checkers from 6 to 7 p.m. So get on out to Brewhouse South today, meet Joseph Newgarden, and get signed up to win tickets to the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix as well. So looking forward to that coming up later today. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. You know, we were talking about Titans fans, and over the next few weeks here in camp, as camp goes, looking at Cam Ward and keeping in mind that it's camp and it's probably going to be some good days and some bad days in the mix of all that. One texter says, Robbie, come on now. You're talking to a fan base that went nutso over mayo-scented cologne, for God's sake. Of course we're going to go nuts about any semblance of quarterback or of competent quarterback play. I get it. Look, I do think sometimes when this time of year rolls around, that there's probably way too many grand takeaways that people have, and that's media included, that's fans, that's everybody, where, you know, you've been football starred for so long to this point that by the time training camp comes around, we want to put so much emphasis on every throw, every rep, every day of practice, and have just these grand takeaways that come from it. And most of the time, what you'll end up finding is, are there some trends that happen throughout the course of training camp that translate to the course of the regular season? Yes, there are. There are also some things that happen on a day-to-day basis in training camp that really have nothing to do with anything at the end of by the time the regular season rolls around. So I think you've always got to keep that in mind this time of year. But like, if you're a Titans fan out there, and with how things have gone the last few years, I understand being starved of wanting to watch good football. It's been a minute since you've watched your team play some good football.
That's
not just
sure.
Good football. Like, it's been a minute since you've watched your team
feel competitive.
Not be totally awful.
Just terrible.
Just totally awful the way they've been the past few years. So I get that part of it. There was a story in college football yesterday that I saw. And we mentioned to start the show, you know, the Big 12, and they're having their media days, and their commissioner got up there yesterday and started talking about the 5-11 college football playoff model, and we'll see what ends up happening on that front. But Scott Frost, who is back at UCF after being really successful in his first stop at UCF, which led to him taking the head coaching job at Nebraska, his alma mater, it did not go well. So he was asked apparently what he learned from the job at Nebraska. And this was the quote that Chris Vanini of The Athletic put out there yesterday. Quote, "Don't take the wrong job." And he elaborated further on that. He said, You know, I said I wouldn't leave UCF unless it was someplace you could win a national championship. I got tugged in a direction to try to help my alma mater, and I didn't really want to do it. It wasn't a good move. I'm lucky to get back to a place where I was a lot happier. I saw that quote.
Crazy.
And I was like, is that real? Like, did somebody hack Chris Vanini? Is this real? No, it's real. This is what Scott Frost said. And look, on the surface of it, like, if a coach, just some random Joe Schmo said this about a former job that they had, I probably wouldn't think that much of it because it's like, okay, well, he didn't do a good job there. And, of course, he's not going to get up there and say that.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to say, well, yeah, I just kind of totally sucked when I was there. It had
nothing
to do with that place.
Yeah, that was all my
fault. So we know that coaches aren't going to say that. But I do, like, I don't know that I've ever seen a coach who went back to his alma mater and was referring to the place where he went to college, get up there and basically trash the place.
Yeah.
Where he was like, yeah, I didn't really want to do it. And I got tugged in a direction to go back there. It was stupid. And I'm lucky to get back here to a place where I'm way happier than I was in my alma mater. Mm-hmm. I could not believe he said that yesterday.
I wonder who tugged him that way.
I don't know.
That really put him over the hump. You know, was he offered a bunch of money? Was it someone in his family, his agent, people he knew from the school that he trusted that they kind of, I don't know, maybe misled him? I don't know. I don't know why he seems to be blaming other people for his decisions, but he seems like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Scott Frost, obviously, he did a great job at UCF the first time around.
Maybe it is a mess at Nebraska.
And, you know, maybe
but
it is.
Surely he would have known that going in.
Well, also, like,
oh, what's the big surprise? Aren't you close to that, or, you know, that school?
And I also think, like, sitting here today and acting like that's a job you didn't want to take, it's not being intellectually honest with
right.
us, right? Like we saw it when it all went down. That's, I mean, you talked about it being your dream job and wanting to get back there and all this other stuff. So unless you're just a liar and you're making stuff up at that time, like, this idea that he didn't want to go back there is just amazing. I just couldn't believe he said it. I could not believe that he said that yesterday. Like,
yeah.
Again, it's one thing if just, like, if Lane Kiffin said something like that, I'd be like, okay, whatever, that's fine. But somebody about their alma mater, I have never seen that.
Yeah, that is definitely a strange one, especially an accomplished player like he was there, you know, in the glory days and such the good run that they had at Nebraska, and to go back and to be so negative after you leave. I don't know. Kind of interesting.
Well, look, you know, I think Nebraska, I like Matt Rhule as a coach. I think he's a good
maybe.
Coach. Now he I think
college coach, maybe.
He's done a lot of stuff this offseason, you know, from canceling the Tennessee game to some of the stuff he said about.
He says,
well,
some
if
wild
you're in the
stuff
Big Ten, if you're in the Big Ten, I think everybody should get in the playoff. It's like, all right, have a little bit of competitive juice to you, man. Like, let's have a little bit of competitiveness if you're going to be a head coach in college football and not just try to take the easy way out all the time. But I do believe that, like, as a college football coach, Matt Rhule is pretty good. So maybe he ends up being the guy that takes Nebraska back in the college football playoff.
They're still in the Big Ten, right?
Yeah. So maybe he ends up getting them back there. But, yeah, I mean, that has been a place since the 90s. I mean, in some ways it's been similar to Tennessee, although I would argue lately Tennessee has had significantly more success than Nebraska has.
Yeah.
But in some ways they're kind of similar of, you know, even Nebraska probably more so, big power in the 80s and 90s, and they've just been searching for it ever since.
Nothing since then.
Yeah.
Just nothing. I mean, it's been a heavy drop-off, and it has not picked up. Usually you'll see some ebb and flows throughout a program when it's like that. You know, even Michigan or, you know, even Michigan State, who were kind of had a decent run there in the 90s. I don't know. I'm probably missing a team or two. But it's up and down. Clemson, you know, over the years, up and down. Not, you know, so it is surprising that Nebraska never really had another up since then. But, I mean, Nebraska, I mean, you talk about middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be easy to recruit to these days.
It's also interesting to see who's in the Big 12 now. You know, he's back at UCF.
I was actually doing that. When we brought up the whole 4-4-2-2 and 5-11 situation, I was like, okay, who is in the ACC right now, and who is in the Big 12 right now? Oh, I saw actually some Big 12 news today. They see they're partnering with WWE.
I saw that, yeah.
As part of to bring SmackDown to some Big 12 markets during the college football season.
Hey, man.
A little combo SmackDown Big 12 matchup same weekend.
Whatever gets some of that money, some of that attention in there, I guess you got to do.
They're going to do Friday, August 22nd, SmackDown at 3 Arena in Dublin, Ireland, prior to the Iowa State versus Kansas State game on Saturday.
Nothing gets me fired up for some Iowa State, Kansas State football like the WWE.
Friday, October 3rd, SmackDown will be in Cincinnati prior to Ohio State at Cincinnati. Friday, October 24th, they will be at Mullet Arena, there you go, in Tempe, prior to Houston at Arizona State. Houston at Arizona State. And then SmackDown at the Delta Center in Salt Lake City, Utah, on Halloween night, prior to Cincinnati at Utah.
There
so
you
get
go.
Excited.
Get excited. The Big 12 but coming up with new ways.
Big 12. Who's in the Big 12 right now? Arizona, Arizona State, Baylor, BYU, Cincinnati, Colorado, Houston, Iowa State, Kansas, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, UCF, Utah, and West Virginia. Wouldn't have been able to guess those if you would have given me five, probably 50 tries.
To think about who's in the Big 12 now, who's in the Big 10 now, and like the Pac-12 just really not being a thing until now they're adding more teams. It's just it's amazing.
Although I do think the Big 12 might be in better shape than the ACC.
I actually agree with that. 6-1-5.
Yeah, some of the ACC schools here, I mean, yeah, they could be in football trouble.
Yes. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Our phone number. Got some of your thoughts to get to on the college football front. We'll do that next. Plus, a story from Tennessee that I saw some fans upset about yesterday that I'm trying to figure out if we should actually care about. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. I got some tickets to give away to Coheed and Cambria at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on Wednesday, September the 3rd. We call the 3, 615-737-1025. Call the 3, we'll win a pair of tickets to see Coheed and Cambria at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on Wednesday, September the 3rd, 615-737-1025. So SEC Media Days is coming up, I believe, next week. And the representatives, the player representatives, have been now thrown out there. And Tennessee will not have quarterback Joey Aguilar or star cornerback Jermon McCoy at their SEC Media Days. And Adam Sparks did a piece on this yesterday for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Miles Kitzelman, Bryson Eason, and Arion Carter are going to Tennessee and will be representing Tennessee at SEC Media Days. Now, on the surface of all this, I do not care. Like, I do not care who is going to SEC Media Days and who is talking for Tennessee. Largely, I have found that SEC Media Days is not a total waste of time, but depending on who's there and who actually wants to speak, there ain't a whole lot going on with SEC Media Day. So I have no problem with Miles Kitzelman or Bryson Eason or Arion Carter representing Tennessee at SEC Media Days. Now, having said that, there were some Tennessee fans I saw that wanted to hear from Jermon McCoy and wanted to hear from Joey Aguilar, the quarterback, at SEC Media Days, and were asking, well, since he's not there, like if Aguilar's not there, does that mean he's not the starter for Tennessee this year? I don't know. Like I think it's going to be somewhat of an open competition heading into the fall between he and Merklinger. I would doubt very seriously that George McIntyre is ready to be the starting quarterback for Tennessee this year. That's a true freshman, but throw him in there if you want to. I wouldn't read too much into SEC Media Days and who's going, who's not going, in terms of who the starting quarterback is going to be. Like I didn't expect Joey Aguilar to be thrown into that mix when he's trying to learn a new offense, get in to his new teammates, and in a quarterback competition coming up this fall. And McCoy, like I think McCoy would be a great choice, but McCoy is still dealing with a torn ACL. So one of the things that's going to come up next week at SEC Media Days that will be interesting to see how Josh Heupel answers it, because it's massively important for how good this Tennessee team could be in the fall. What is McCoy's status? Because you're talking about probably their best player. He is one of the elite cornerbacks in college football, and they need him to be ready, and they need him to be ready early. Probably not in the first couple of weeks. Like they could probably get by against Syracuse with not having Jermaine McCoy ready to go. But they got Georgia early this year. They got Georgia really early in the schedule. And if they don't have Jermaine McCoy and full speed Jermaine McCoy in that game, that one's going to be tough. It's going to be tough with him. It's going to be a lot tougher without him. So that's really the one thing from Tennessee's perspective that I'm interested to see if there's any sort of comment on next week from Heupel, is where exactly is McCoy in his recovery? Is he going to be ready by the start of the season? And if not, how quickly into the season could he be ready? Now, I know Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel is probably not going to get into too much detail about that, if I had to guess. Like, I doubt very seriously Heupel's going to come out there and be like, here's exactly where Jermaine McCoy is mm-hmm. in his rehab process.
Yeah, we'll find out during the injury report.
Yeah, you'll find out probably like the week of the Syracuse game exactly yep. what's going on
yeah.
with Jermaine McCoy. Beyond that, like I don't have any expectation that Heupel is going to say much about the quarterbacks next week at all in terms of who's starting, who's playing. He's going to approach it like an open competition, and I don't think Josh Heupel is going to get up on the podium next week and be like, Joey Aguilar is our starter. I don't think that's happening at this point. So I wouldn't read too much into who's representing Tennessee at SEC Media Days next week.
Yeah, I would imagine bringing the quarterback just brings extra drama they don't feel like dealing with at this point in the offseason. You know, have to answer questions constantly about the situation and the transfer and Nico and all the stuff. It's like, why even bother? It's not even worth it at this point. We'll be answering those questions all throughout camp, all that kind of stuff. So we'll focus on this and we'll move on. So, yeah, I agree.
Right. Like, I just look at it and we're going to get into a lot of the Vanderbilt and Tennessee part of this next week when SEC Media Days
is coming. Oh, we talking smack.
There's some smack that gets talking. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, Pavia.
Is Pavia going?
I don't know. I haven't seen. I need to look. God, I hope so. That may be something that SEC Media Days that we might actually have to look forward to.
That might actually be the only thing worth SEC Media Days if Pavia somehow makes it down there. We'll have to double check.
Pavia,
if
he goes,
any official announcement
might be like the only one from SEC Media Days in general, with the possible exception of Lane Kiffin, that would be worth like streaming live, right? Like this is like, oh, good, Pavia's talking. Like that would probably be the only one other than Kiffin. So we'll see. You know, Tennessee is a really interesting team to me.
I mean, according to the Tennessean, it sounds like Pavia's there.
Sweet. Finally. Something to look forward to from a player interview up there. All right, looking forward to that coming up next week. You know, Tennessee, to me, depending on quarterback play and a couple other factors, could probably be anywhere from 6-6 to 10-2 this year when you look at it. And when you really drill down on it, that's a pretty wide variance in college football. Like, there's a baseline of talent that they have put together that Heupel's been able to recruit and retain. Well, they're going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, they've got a pretty good talent level.
Would you be disappointed if they didn't make the playoff this year?
I'll put it to you this way.
Last year it was a yes.
Last year, yes. I'll put it to you this way. I don't have the expectation that they're making the playoff this year.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I know for some Tennessee fans, yes, that will be a disappointment. I do not have that expectation based on how young they are on offense and what their quarterback
Change
situation
their quarterback.
Looks like.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that they were – I don't know if Nico stayed if they were going to make the playoffs.
Really?
You'd
still be skeptical even with Nico, huh?
They've got some offensive line questions.
Wide receiver
they've
questions.
Got certainly some wide receiver questions. Like, you know, everybody's talking about Mike Matthews, and I agree. I'm excited about Mike Matthews.
Highly ranked.
They haven't done anything yet. Like, Mike Matthews has barely played for Tennessee to this point. So we'll see what that looks like this year. But I think defensively, particularly if McCoy is healthy, they've got a chance to be pretty good on the defensive side of the ball, and that's going to keep you in a lot of games. But we'll see what level of quarterback play that they get. Those two this year are, I mean, Tennessee and Vanderbilt both are really interesting. Vanderbilt from, like, if you can keep Pavia healthy and you can get him through the season with that offense, are they still able to be as productive offensively as they were a year ago? Or do teams look at what they did last year and catch on a little bit and are able. I mean, the one thing that you feel good about if you're Vanderbilt beyond Pavia is Stowers is a stud.
Yep.
And you've also got a very, at this point, experienced offensive line. So those are good things to have in the SEC, their schedule is brutal. I mean, their schedule is very difficult. So we're going to see exactly what Pavia and that team are made of this year. But again, we got a lot of time next week to get into all that. But on the surface, there are some very, very intriguing things about both Tennessee and Vanderbilt heading into this year.
Hey, maybe it could lead to an interesting season. At least, you know, I don't know if either team will be elite this year, but it could be a fun, you know, interstate kind of thing.
Yes, it could. We'll see what happens on that front. That's going to do it for us today here on the show. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the day. Rex Road will be back tomorrow, so we will get into a lot of different things with Rex Road tomorrow on the program. Hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the day. Again, make sure you check it out tonight at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Joseph Newgarden going to be out there, a special edition of Chasing Checkers with Big Joe from 6 to 7. So 5:30 to 7 tonight, Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. You can come out and meet Joseph Newgarden, and you can sign up for your chance to win tickets to the Bruschetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix as well. So very much looking forward to that. We will be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. The Chase and Big Joe Show with Big Joe and Nick Frazier is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.